And had the opportunity for you to get to know us a little better. Grace Bible Church has been very involved in our lives for several years through prayer and support and just encouragement, and it's been a major blessing to us. And we're very thankful that we could have the opportunity to come down and to see you guys and get to know a little bit more about the church. About us, what can I share? Darlene and I have been married 36 years, and we have raised four children. And some of this might be a repeat from lunch we shared a little bit with Dana and Tyler, and the kids. We have a very unique family. We ended up having our oldest son marry a Canadian. Our second son married a missionary kid whose mother is Australian and father is Indonesian. And then my third son married a Chinese Malaysian doctor who at that time was doing her internship in Scotland. And then we are getting word now that our daughter could become engaged in the near future. And she's just dating an ordinary American young man. So that's a little different for our family. But our children are all back in the United States right now with working on some green card issues. You might be amused to hear that as they've traveled in and out of the country, they've ministered a lot in Asia. They found a lot of difficulty with immigration, even though they're married, and they came into the States, and they found that they really needed to get green cards for their wives, and there's a possibility some of them will go ahead and get citizenship. But the interesting thing out of Indonesia, Australia, Malaysia, and Canada, the one that gave us the biggest problems was our daughter-in-law from Canada. So you got to be careful about those Canadians. So the immigration things. So anyway, like I said, Darlene and I are just some ordinary people. Our background has been that we've lived in Colorado most of our lives, all of our married life up until the last 12 years. My background has been in natural resources at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. We just had a heart to serve God, and we served locally in our church there in Woodland Park. And I served as a youth pastor for nearly 20 years in the church. During that time, we really thought it was important to try to get as many young people out of the youth group onto the foreign mission field. Not that they would become missionaries, and I wasn't necessarily interested in becoming a missionary, but I did realize during some of the short-term mission trips that we took that it gave a lot of the young people a little different perspective. And one of the things that I learned over the years from a man by the name of Brother Andrew, I don't know if anyone recognizes that name, he's with Voice of the Martyrs. He's a Dutch man, and he's been very involved in going into a lot of the closed countries over the year, take smuggling Bibles and things like that. But he shared with me in a book that the real call of God upon people's lives is not to a certain place or to a career, but to everyday obedience. I really started to apply that in my life some years ago and really got before the Lord and began to think that the Lord was calling me to go overseas and serve as a foreign missionary. The interesting thing was, and you saw a little clip this morning from Nepal, in the sense that my wife had a call in her life when she was 10 years old to be a missionary. She failed to mention that before we got married. And I'll let her speak for herself. But she really had a heart for young people. She has a gift of evangelism, and God has done some amazing things, and we might even share a few stories about that. But the interesting thing was, as we served in our local community and our local church and stuff, I mean, Darlene was fulfilling the Great Commission because we were involved in evangelizing with young people and serving, again, in the local church and the community and stuff. So when the time came, one day when I was home praying and the Lord really spoke to my heart, I came in and mentioned it to my wife that I was sensing that We thought maybe we might consider missions when all our children were grown, when they got out of high school and were going on to college, and we'd have more time to do it. But the Lord really called our whole family to go on the mission field together. Now, if you're familiar with foreign missions at all, normally that's most mission organizations do not want you to go on the mission field with adolescent children. It's very difficult for adolescents especially to make that change. But in their wisdom, as we talked with our church and mission organization and stuff, they encouraged us to take our children on the mission field for a season and just to see how they did. So we did that. Three of our four children went. Our oldest son was already in Malaysia at that time serving. And we found that our children absolutely loved being on the mission field with us. So that was very exciting. But what we're finding now is that after 12 years serving, we're going to take a quick moment here and bring you up to date a little bit more about Nepal. We'll click on that top one and let you watch that. This is only 3 minutes long, so it's very short. But it'll give you some interesting things about Nepal.
Nepal is one of the poorest countries in the world, and like I told you this morning, it's mostly Hindu. There's a large percentage is Hindu, and then there's Buddhist, and we have 1.5 million Muslim in the nation, and a couple of Mike's best friends in Nepal are Muslim people. And there's just so much to tell you about it. Where we live in Nepal, there are temples everywhere. And everywhere they walk, they do their little worship where they bow down and ring a bell. And right behind our house, there is a little temple. And they, just as that pastor was talking this morning, that scripture where they had to wake up their gods to pray to them, that happens all over Nepal every single day. And they also worship rocks and trees and handmade idols of wood and brass and gold and everything you can think of. It's bizarre how many gods are there. But in spite of that, there is a hunger to know the living God. These people are, they live in fear. They're afraid that they won't appease their gods the right way. And they are named after their Hindu gods and demons as children. And there's just a lot of, they want to cover all their bases so that they will end up in the right place for eternity. But they believe in reincarnation. So, like, if you meet someone who's handicapped, they're not very compassionate for them because, well, they must have done something really bad in their past life, or they wouldn't be in this shape now. So I work in the hospital setting, being a patient advocate for very poor families and help out in that a lot. And I see a lot of injustices, which is heartbreaking. The poverty is unbelievable in Nepal. Most of the people are subsistence farmers, and that really is, they live to eat, and there's nothing left over. But the young people are becoming more and more unsatisfied living out in these hills and these mountains. Only 10% of Nepal has roads. So life is hard. Like I said, there's a lot of injustice and poverty. We still have a lot of diseases like leprosy and TB and a lot of things that we deal with there. The water a lot of times is not clean. They've polluted the rivers, not taking care of them. And there's a lot of hopelessness there. Here in America, Hinduism and Buddhism is quite attractive. But we can tell you from experience working and ministering and loving on the Hindu-Buddhist, it is a really scary, both of those religions are very, very scary. And the people, the ones in the midst of it, a lot of it's absolutely terrifying for them. And it takes a long time to lead them to the Lord. But when they come to the realization that there is a God who loved them, who cares about them, it's so transforming that they are willing to be persecuted by their family or their village or lose their job because it's just so life-changing for them to have love instead of fear and hope instead of hopelessness. So each day it's just really important for us to really yield to the Lord because, like Mike said, we don't know what a day is going to bring. We do have days that we know we're going to have, like a women's Bible study or a men's group. We do a lot of mentoring and discipling and counseling, but because we're the mom and dad now, we do a lot of counseling with other young missionaries, a lot of encouragement. Our home is open. A revolving door, missionaries come who live way out away from the city and they just need a place to come in if they have to do their visas or go to the doctor or something. Or sometimes it's Nepali families that stay with us. And every day there are beggars at our gates and we have to pray, okay, do we just turn them away? Do we help them? And it's just a constant thing, yielding to the Lord, and we are so dependent on Him because this is nothing we can do in our own strength. We have to have God's grace to deal with all different situations. We get tired of people begging us everywhere we go, and we just have to say, Lord, is this someone you want us to help or to love on? And sometimes those beggars are not sincere beggars. Sometimes there's rackets behind it. And sometimes there really are people who need help. So we need God to give us discernment. And so your prayers for us are important every day. Sometimes it may be someone coming to want to hear about Jesus or a medical need or someone who has a family member dying and they want us to take us to pray with that person. And because we have been there a long time, we have got to build a lot of very special relationships. And when we're not there, we miss them. And it's a few stories. You saw the one picture with me with the girls earlier. We had four little girls who had lost their mother and then their father, and they were very low caste family, very poor, living in the trash by a very dirty river. And it was like, what's going to become of these girls? Their uncle had three children. He did not have any money. He was concerned about them, but he just really couldn't take them. He was trying to figure out how he could. He actually was a new Christian. And so we began to pray, and then the Lord provided a family that had recently come to Nepal was starting an orphanage. And most orphanages would not take four kids, it just would overload them, but they agreed to take these four girls. And when we went to get them, of course, there were lots of tears, and they were still grieving, they were scared to death. As we took them to the house where they were going to stay, bathed the little ones, they were ages 4 to 12, and the mud just ran off from them. And they had lice, and we used lice shampoo and fed them a huge plate of the lentils and gravy. And I've never seen kids eat that much food. And then we put clean clothes on them. And within a short time, they were all giggles and laughing. And these little girls are now being able to attend school. They're involved in a Nepali church. They're coming to Christ and learning to read and write where no one in their family could read and write before. So it's neat to see how God intervenes in their lives. Another story is when we were caring for a woman who actually was a Christian. Her husband was a migrant worker in Malaysia, so he wasn't around. She had two children, and she was dying of cancer, and I think she was in her 30s. And so we took care of her, prayed with her, encouraged her for many months, and she was put in a hospice. And in the hospice in Nepal, there's not many hospices, but thankfully she got to be in one. The beds are like this far apart from each other. And we loved her and cared her until she went to heaven, but we didn't know that there was a 21-year-old girl in the bed next to her, a Hindu girl, who was watching us every day, listening to us sing and pray, and was impressed about the love and care. And after she died, she said to me, "Would you tell me about this Jesus? I've never been around people like you." And this girl was also dying of cancer. And so we got to lead her to Christ, and the last few months of her life, she got to experience the hope and love of Jesus, which was just God, because for her to lay there and be having no hope, and obviously the Hindus couldn't offer that to her, and so she died with Jesus. And another time, Dana knows about the story about Umesh and his mother. This mother and her son had had one traumatic thing after another happen in their life, and the little boy had been abused very badly as a little boy. When I met him, I think he was probably around 10 years old, 11 years old, but he had probably the mentality of a first grader. He didn't do well in school. He had actually seen his father killed. A bus had blown up when we had our Civil War. He'd been on a bus with his father and seen the bus blew up, and he had only found a part of the father left. And he had that trauma, and he just, so many. And then his sister committed suicide. And this poor kid was just in need of Jesus and the hope of Jesus too. So we were able to minister to Situ and Umesh. She came to my women's Bible study for a while, and then we went to her house, and she had not a speck of furniture, nothing in her house. She had sold everything when she was caring for her daughter, and so when we found her, she had nothing. And because people like you help our ministry, then we had them wherewithal to be able to help her provide a bed and food and bedding and things like that. And we were able to get Umesh into a school, a special needs school. Their house, just a little tiny room, just as dark as could be, but for them, they were thrilled. And so they continued to be a part of our lives and ministry. And right before we left Nepal, the day we were leaving, Umesh gave his heart to Christ. And I was just ecstatic. And one of our missionary friends since we left said it was the real deal. He really did understand, and he's been going to Nepali church even when his mother hasn't. And if you think of it, pray for Umesh and his mother. She's had, I think since we've left, she's had a breakdown, and she just still needs Jesus to help her just with all the heartache they've suffered in their life. And for the Lord to do a miracle and continue to care for Umesh, whether his mom can take care of him or not. So thank you for helping us, and we have lots of stories like those, and we have Nepali friends that have leprosy that have come to Christ. My neighbor has no feet and hands, and yet she is this dynamic prayer warrior. She was the first Nepali leprosy patient in Nepal to come to Christ, and she is an adorable little lady. It was very painful for us when we left, because she didn't know when she'd see us. And for us, it was hard because she's one of our main prayer warriors. So I just want to encourage you, if you have a heart for missions, that you would ask the Lord just what his plan or his purpose is for you, whether it's you or your kids. Read those stories about missionaries to your children. Entertain missionaries in your home and talk about missions and see, pray about it and pray for the nations. Ask the Lord to give you a nation or a people group that will, someone, when you read the newspaper, you'll go, oh, Burma is in the news again, and pray for them to know the Lord and ask the Lord if he wants you to be a missionary. We need you. The harvest is so ripe. Asia has a lot of the world's population, and so many of them need Christ so badly. So I'm going to turn it back to Mike.
We want to entertain some questions a little bit with you, too, because this happens to us on a regular basis. And it may not happen here, but you're with the people that don't know you or they just have met you. And, of course, the question always comes up, what do you do? And you say, well, I'm a missionary. And as soon as you say that M word, people just, you know, they don't want anything to do with you, like you're some sort of saint, you know, levitating. So, but again, we are just ordinary people that have sought the Lord and listened to his direction and tried very hard just to walk in that. And missionaries have their good days and they have their bad days. And my wife had the privilege to attend a women's conference. Was that in Nepal or somewhere overseas with a group of other missionaries? And when women missionaries get together, they like to swap stories. And so they were asking if any of the missionaries had any good stories to share, you know, and they were sharing. And the one that just brought the house down was the little girl who came home from school. And she said, you know, the Smith family, they are very wealthy. And the mother goes, well, why do you say that? She says, well, when she comes to school, she brings her sandwiches in a baggie. And when she finishes the sandwiches, she throws them away. So, though, and then, of course, Darlene's story is kind of sordid. I really don't want to mention this, but, you know, there's been days that Darlene and I don't get along. You know, that's, I'm letting the cat out of the bag, I know, but. And we had a day, and I go to school. I usually am at school by 10 o'clock in the morning several days a week where I serve. And we had a disagreement, and we didn't get it resolved before I left. So, and I was kind of looking at the watch because as a Westerner, I'm very concerned about time. So I went ahead and left. I mean, she was wrong, and I couldn't convince her otherwise. So I went outside, and we live under some big trees, and we get these big crows that get in our tree. So I got on the motorcycle, and just as I got on the motorcycle, this crow cut loose and just slimed me. So, but I didn't think Darlene was quite ready to seek my forgiveness, so I went ahead and went to school with the bird doo-doo on me. And as I went to school, the roads are very narrow there, and the motorcycle is very handy because if you get alongside a bus or whatever, and you can kind of skirt around them and get around and stuff. But it's a very common thing because the main means of transportation in Nepal is on these rickety old buses. But a lot of the people that come from the village and stuff get on these buses, and as soon as those buses start moving, they get upset stomachs. And what they will do is they will just let it all go right out the window. They just open the window and just heave out the window. Well, because the traffic is zooming around these buses, I went to pass this bus, and just as I passed this bus, this person cut loose. So I got, yeah, I was a mess. By the time I got to my school, I had the crow and the other on me, and I walked in my school, and they looked at me and thought, what happened, you know, and I wasn't smelling very good, and I wasn't about to go home, but they decided that probably it would be best, because I looked so bad, that I should go home. I didn't want to go home, so as I decided to go ahead and get back in the city, because this is out in the village, I got on the bike, And before I got home, the clouds just cut loose and poured rain on me. So by the time I got home, my wife was more than happy to seek my forgiveness. So we got it resolved.
Probably a very bad, terrible, horrible day.
Tell them.
I called that the No Good, Very Bad, Horrible, Terrible Day, that book.
So we have our own.
Only he asked forgiveness and he got home.
But what we learned on the years on the field, and this year has been a very interesting year for us, and it began by some quiet time with the Lord again, and one morning, and the Lord began to speak to me. I find a lot of enjoyment journaling and just recording what I'm gleaming from Scripture and times of prayer, and the Lord began to show us that He had some things He wanted us to be involved in. The interesting thing is He did not tell us ahead of time what those things were. But we had to come to a place where we were willing to agree to do whatever the Lord said, and then we would wait upon Him. So when Darlene got up that morning, it was in February of 2010, we prayed together, and I asked Darlene, I said, before I even shared with her what I was sensing, I said, is the Lord showing you anything? And she said, yes. She says, to get prepared. And I said, prepared for what? And she couldn't tell me. So we just prayed about it, but we came to the place in agreement that whatever the Lord shows us, we are willing to do. So we said yes to the Lord, and then it just got quiet. So we waited, and we waited. But very shortly thereafter, opportunities began to present themselves. People ask us to do things that would begin to lead us into several of the neighboring nations. And we had just the incredible peace knowing that we were walking with the Lord. We still had our home in Nepal, and many times we were able to go and serve alongside some people in need, missionaries and things, and then come back to Nepal. And we just continued to walk by faith during that time. But one of the things the Lord showed us in that, He says, you're going to be about restoring the joy of the Lord in people's lives. So I journaled that, and I wrote that down, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. And then we began this journey. Well, during that journey also, we had some people that prayed over us. And as they prayed, they said, we really sense the Lord is going to give you a new home. And I said, well, can you expound on that a little bit? And they said, no, but that's just what the Lord said. So I wrote that down in my journal. Now I've got, we're restoring the joy of the Lord in people's lives, and we're going to get a new home. And I just kind of put that away for some time. And because we've realized that trust is a process. You know, it grows as you begin to walk it out. You know, and after a while walking with the Lord, you realize that He can be trusted. And another quote that it's very interesting, I think, is from another missionary. And she wrote, today is mine, tomorrow is none of my business. If I peer anxiously into the fog of the future, I will strain my spiritual eyes so I will not be able to see what is required of me to know. And I definitely agree that is something that I just have to trust the Lord in this whole process. And that, but the Lord began to really begin to move in our lives as we found out that Darlene's mother was in critical condition, and it was a very serious time, and she was able to fly home to do some help with her father and her mother being in the hospital. So then several months later, I turned around and came back to the United States. We stored our stuff in Nepal, and I left, not knowing when we'd be able to return. So as we've done that, Darlene's mother has recovered, and she's doing very well. But we began to really begin to get before the Lord again, just like we did so many years ago, in determining what He might have for us to do. And as He did that, He began to reveal some things to us. And we had a day that the Lord was speaking to Darlene, and the Lord was speaking to me independently. So what we did was Darlene came in and said, can we talk? And I said, sure. And so we got up and we sit down in our living room where we had done 15 years ago, 13, 14, 15 years ago, and compared notes. And the interesting thing was her notes that she'd received that day and what I had received from the Lord, they dovetailed. They fit exactly. And what the Lord was saying for us to do was that he had something for us to do in another nation, a neighboring nation. He hasn't given us the timetable, and many people always ask us, well, how long will you be there? I can't tell you how long we'll be there. I can't tell you exactly what we're going to do, but it's what the Lord has shown us to do. And as you can see, there's kind of a giveaway up there on the video. We'll show that to you right now. This is just another short clip, because I don't have a lot of video footage from this, but this is in northern Thailand, and we want to take you to Thailand.
Side is the Brianna's House of Joy. So though that came true, and the Lord had given us lots of scriptures, like, I'm doing a new thing, I'm going to extend to your tent pegs, I'm going to lead the blind along unfamiliar paths. So as we sought the Lord, he just showed us that this is something new, a new assignment for us. We don't know if it's a long-term or short-term. It's definitely taking us out of our comfort zone, because Nepal has become comfortable. Even though it's a difficult place to live, it's home for us. And now this is a very big new adventure, and we're going to be totally dependent on the Lord like we always are. But it's a huge thing, because it's a new language and a new culture, and girls, 41 girls' names to learn and love on, and we're not sure all we're going to be doing. The people who run the home, who started it, are longtime friends of ours. They've had a lot of trouble keeping overseers. We're not sure. We maybe do some overseeing, but we also may be doing some networking to bring other people along, because we do know a lot of other missionaries. Maybe the Lord has a perfect fit with someone out there that we haven't met yet. They want to have discipling done with the girls, which we enjoy doing, and then ministering out in the villages and stuff, trying to build relationships there. And so most of these girls are orphans, ages 7 to 17. Some of them have had really heartbreaking situation. Well, probably many of them. When we were there 6 years ago visiting, a 5-year-old was brought in. Her entire extended family had been killed in an automobile accident. She's the only one that had lived through it. So some of them, their parents have died from some drug overuse, some from disease, some from cancer, all different things. We'll probably, next time we see you, we'll have more stories than that. But we are leaving that. We'll be going there January 12th. And so we would covet your prayers, because this is a whole new scenario for us. And you can come.
I wrote just a couple of notes here concerning Thailand, because one of the first observations as we have traveled at different times, we were involved in Thailand a lot in the early 1990s with the prayer journeys that went in, and we went with our pastor and several teams, and Thailand was our focus country. And at that time, we thought that we would probably end up in Thailand. And as the Lord led us, we ended up in Nepal. So it's kind of interesting. We've kind of done full circle. But one of the things, as you enter into Thailand, I don't know if anyone here has been in Thailand, but every single building has some type of a shrine on it that people worship, and they pray to these deities that supposedly inhabit these properties. These shrines are all cleaned every day. They are adorned with fresh flowers. They sprinkle water on them. Sometimes they put fresh fruit and food out there for the deities. This is a function of their national identity in Thailand, because in Thailand they say to be Thai is to be Buddhist, and that's the faith that they have. And that's something that missionaries have been in Thailand for a very, very long time, and they have just not been able to really penetrate the Buddhism in Thailand. what we're seeing from the missionary reports and stuff, that the gospel is really going out into the tribal areas, which these young ladies represent six of the, I don't know how many tribal groups there are in Thailand, but there's six groups represented in the school, and there's where the best work is being done for the gospel there. But if you'll also notice, when they made mention to it, that you see a lot of thousands and thousands of children working in the streets there, in the sweatshops, and really sad is they have a huge sex industry there that the children are used for in the international sex trade. The northern area of Thailand where we're going to be living is probably where the most extreme poverty is found within these tribes and disease. There's over 1,000 villages in this area that Darlene and I are going into, and what I've been asked and I'm praying about too is they would like to really begin relationships with the villages that these girls have come out to, with the village leaders and things like this, where they're very animistic, but there'll be opportunities there that for us to minister into these tribes. But again, there's a lot of illiteracy, there's disease, the child exploitation, and there's also a lot of drug trafficking in this area.
The wonderful thing is these girls, these 41 girls, are safe from being trafficked. If they had been left to their situation, many of them would have been tricked or sold into the sex industry of Thailand. So it's just so precious of the Lord to have spared their lives that they'll grow up knowing Jesus and being safe from those horrors.
You know, as we're going to answer some questions here in a moment, but we want you to pray for us that as we take on this challenge ahead, you know, as Darlene's mentioned, this is going to be a whole new culture for us. This is a whole new language, and even the languages are much like Nepal. They speak Thai, but there's many different dialects. I think in the one film it depicted that there were 90 different languages in Nepal spoken, but there's a lot in Thailand also with these people. But we just really want to be obedient to the Lord because, you know, people all over the world, as in Nepal, Thailand, have tried all kinds of ways to please their gods. And, you know, and I was taken to Micah this morning as I was praying about sharing with you tonight. And it's a very familiar scripture. It's found in Micah 6. And it talks about how do you please God? And it's interesting. It says here that in verses 6 and 7, it says, "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings," which is very common in Nepal, very common in Thailand, "with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams and with 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for sin of my soul?" And he answers, "He has showed you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." So, you know, God has made his wishes known to us, and that's exactly the way Darlene and I want to go into this new challenge that he's given us, this new opportunity. We want to go in humbly just to serve the people of Thailand, to serve at the Brianna's House of Joy, and to see what the Lord would have for us. Because as we've done that in Nepal, he's opened up so many doors, and we've had many, many opportunities. Not that we're going to be able to do it all right. There's just many times that we make big mistakes, but God is very gracious in that, and he's allowed us to make mistakes and learn from our mistakes and go on.
And we'll just go in as learners.
Yeah. So we'll give an opportunity. Is there anything that comes to mind as we are sharing tonight? We could answer some questions.
So you talked about working at a school in Nepal. Will you be doing anything? I mean, obviously you have the school of
Brianna's House
of Joy, but is that what you
would primarily do? No. The girls go to three different schools, Thai schools, in that area up where they are. They are a little bit north. They're about 20 minutes outside of Chiang Mai, which is in the far northern part of Thailand. But they have a good school system for them. But they are learning things in the Brianna's House of Joy that they wouldn't necessarily learn in the Thai schools. And that's where the Christian
discipleship
and things like that. And there's been many teams that have come in at different times and taught different things to the girls. And they have a nice facility there now. And so we'll be within the compound, not necessarily living in with the girls, but in a separate building.
Plus, the language is going to be a barrier. So I don't know when their schools... In Nepal, they're teaching English in the schools more and more, but I don't know in Thailand if they do it as much. I think they do some, but we'll find out.
Another questions? You all ready to go to Thailand? Has anybody, tell me, where have you traveled in this group? Has anybody been out of the United States? Been to Thailand. Bangkok?
Just Bangkok.
Just Bangkok, okay. So you were in the urban setting, major city there. But you saw a little bit what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, the shrines everywhere. And,
yeah.
The Buddhist temples everywhere. Very elaborate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
People worshiping at them.
And we're... The temples and, oh yeah, they're very ornate, very beautiful. Spend a lot more money on those temples and things than they do a lot of times for the people that are hurting.
The king of Thailand is in his late 80s now, and when he does die, the nation is going to be turned upside down because he's been a very revered king and really worshipped as a god, which is very wrong, but his son is very opposite of what his father represented and did, and so the people are not going to probably accept him as king, and so it stands to be a lot of strife going on in the coming years after he goes. So you can be praying for God to intervene in that and have his people set in place, because it's time for the harvest to be reaped in that nation too. And the young people are more... Buddhism is getting to be more of a tradition, and it's not heartfelt like it would be for the grandparents and older parents. Everywhere we go in these nations, it seems like the youth are ready for the gospel because their traditional religions just aren't cutting it for them, obviously. So, lots of opportunities. Any other questions? Probably like discipleship and kind of overseeing. There are nationals that are taking good care of the girls, but there's always different issues going on. With 41 girls, you can only imagine how well they all get along and what needs dealt with, and just internally, but then making sure needs are met. If someone needs to go to the hospital or doctor, or they need to go shopping to get things, going to the villages and making relationships with relatives, because when these girls are released from high school or the university, they don't want them seen go back to the village and have some great uncle marry them off to a drug lord, which those kind of things happen all the time there. So praying that there will be breakthroughs in the villages they're from, and that these girls are ready to be strong and courageous and make a difference in their culture. So there's a lot to do, but we've been there to help, but we haven't worked there before. So we can let you know what all we'll be doing. I'm sure it's, and we will be learning language and just the adjusting and everything of life there.
One of the things the Lord showed us in this particular assignment was that we were to come alongside those who are already invested in the kingdom of God there, that we didn't have to go there to recreate the wheel and try to come up with a ministry or anything, that he wanted us to go and to strengthen, to encourage, build up. And there's a family there. I think you may be aware of Zane and Jan Stoddard are now in Thailand right now. And they're longtime personal friends of ours, and part of our work there will be to strengthen them and to build them up, to stand with them, because it's on the mission field, we need each other. And it's a really good thing to have Christian brothers and sisters who are willing to walk with you and to be there during the hard times and just to lead you and do whatever. You know, when we went to Nepal, very similar. We were asked to come and work with the Nepali youth because of my background a little bit. But the Lord, as we came, we were willing to do whatever. And the Lord just opened up doors continuously. We've been involved in so many things that I never even dreamt that I'd be involved in, including the Nepali church there and stuff. We have been very active in the Nepali church there, and it's standing on its own, but still there's a much work to be done there. So before we go to I'm sorry.
One.
Yeah.
I can ask one or a steady stream of questions.
I'll okay.
The first one, though. Again, you don't quite know, but I can imagine, let's see, 41 girls, you could spend, somebody is spending a lot of time cooking and cleaning and washing. You could turn into housekeepers.
Well, we don't have to do that.
Okay. It takes money to run this. Yeah. You could go and become the financial, this could be the bookkeeping and fundraising.
And we don't have to do that.
We don't have to do that.
Cool, keep going. They have people in place doing that right
okay.
now.
So
there's nationals doing the cooking and.
Are you what I'll call the overseer? That word slipped in a little bit. Are you the administrator of making sure the cook cooks and the cleaner cleans?
Probably
and the fundraiser
a little
funds?
More.
That will be part of it, but I think more than anything else, we have seen. I mean, living in Nepal, we've had contact with the people serving in Thailand. And we've seen people come and take positions within Brianna's House of Joy, and they just haven't lasted, Americans and things. And one of the things that's been the most difficult for them is to make that cultural transition. I mean, and I'm not faulting anyone, but they weren't adequately prepared to go there.
The culture of Thailand or the culture of 41 girls in Thailand?
Yes. So I think it'll be good for us to be able to, I think we'll be able to adapt a little bit easier than most people. I mean, we're going from Nepal to Thailand, so we get electricity and water and air conditioning and things like that, which we didn't have in Nepal. So it'll be easier.
They're pretty supportive.
Yeah.
They see it as a social work, and they are registered. Brianna's House of Joy is registered with the government, and some of the stuff, positive stuff, community help, they have had a positive standing with that area, with the people. So that's good. We're walking into a good, safe place with that. Other people have been doing the fundraising for the girls' house itself, which is a blessing, but it is a huge thing, that many girls taking care of all their needs. So, we'll find out more as we get there.
But no knowledge yet of overt persecution and difficulty, other than you still herding cats, I understand.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, that stuff goes on a regular basis, but not to the degree probably in some places that we have been where they really do persecute you when you come to Christ. Because these girls are orphans, it's a little bit different. They're family.
You're feeding them, you're taking care of them.
Yeah.
They leave you alone, yeah.
The aunt and uncles that don't want them are glad that they don't have to feed them, so maybe those kind of things.
Nepal is considered a restricted nation. Not forbidden, but restricted. The gospel is restricted. So I don't think Thailand is restricted. So there is a little more freedom there. So
The king told the people that almost all of the good things like hospitals, hospices, orphan care, there's just so many things, even a lot of the community care over all the years has been done by Christians, even though it was a Buddhist. So he was saying, isn't it time for the Buddhists to kick in and start doing these things that all these Christians have done for this country for over 100 years? So they do have a pretty good standing with the country, and now the Buddhists are starting to do some of those things now.
We want to give you an opportunity to pray. And then when we finish praying, I want to show one final video presentation. And this one was involved with some young people that are very much in fire for the Lord, and my son's been involved with them, and they did this presentation. But it'll really explain to you, I think a lot of us get a little discouraged what's going on in our own nation, but you realize that God is on the move around the world, and you're going to see a little bit of what's going on in Asia, and they do it through worship dance done by a Thai woman, a Christian woman. So, but we'll pray first. All right? I'll leave it to you, Todd.
All right, thank you. I just want to take a few minutes and pray specifically for the Cormans, and I'd like to have some people come gather around the Cormans, and let's pray for them specifically, lay some hands on them, and then we'll let them finish. But